Are you ready?
I'm ready. Semper paratus. Always ready, man.
Things to do, people to see. Charlie Cook sees ya, yalla habibi. Guest of the day on World's Local Show. We keep it real. That's how we go. Places to be, but first we go deep. Bahrain Confidential, though, why we keep. From Bahrain to the world, stories untold. For the few right here, watch it all unfold.
You understand. That was awesome, man. I like this. This is awesome. This is so like bespoke and customized. I feel so special.
All right. Charlie.
World's Local.
Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Thank you. Things to do, people to see, places to be.
What is it about?
And today, that's all about you.
What is it about? Things to do? I mean, are you going to make nursery rhymes out of it? Are you going to make a book out of it? Is it a theme? Is it a product? Is it some service that's going to come? What is it about?
Do you know what? I've never really thought about it much. Things to do, people to see, places to be. I think it just defines sort of how I live my life. I wake up in the morning every single day, Sunday to Saturday. I have things to do. I wake up, I've got tasks or problems to solve, things in the business. I've got to travel somewhere, places to be. Needed to be in Dubai, Riyadh, or London, somewhere. Things to do. People to see. Mm-hmm. I've got people that I need to meet and see to sort things out.
And this is what business is about, right?
Because I'm always sort of on the move. So people will be like, oh, what are you doing? Or where you're going? And I'll just say, you know, I've got things to do. I just have things to do.
Yeah.
I have people that I need to see and places to be. So I remember once I was in a plane, I was traveling somewhere, and I just posted that. And then maybe 1 or 2 years ago. And since then, I've just kept it
like,
a thing.
Like the three of them.
Sorry?
Together, three of them
all
together.
All three together. Things to do, people to see, places to be.
It's lovely.
So it's just sort of like a story of my life. Every day, things to do.
See, that inspired today, me to make a rap out of it, which I never did in my life.
It's
my wife, when she saw me practicing, she was like, Namshida, I don't know what's going to happen. I might not, you know, associate with you after this.
I can imagine you're in the shower getting ready for work and she hears you singing this.
No, I was yesterday in the parking lot.
Oh, really?
When I was waiting for her from the shopping.
Yeah.
Okay, what is few? What do you mean by few? Only few of you wants to be successful. Only few of you wants to be rich. This is what you want to be. This is what you call it few. Only few of you wants to be fit. What is this few mentality? What is the few?
Let me think about that. I think another thing that's really caught on, it started when I was in the gym. Because I go to the gym basically every single day. And I don't take rest days. And people say, oh, you should take rest days. You need your muscles to grow.
Not even Friday, Saturdays?
No. I go every day. You should rest, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't want to. I enjoy going to the gym. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm lifting weights every day. It could just be cardio. Even after a night out, I'll go, I'll do 45 minutes cardio. So anyway, I do it every single day. And people don't seem to understand. So it mostly applies to my fitness in the gym. Mm. But also, I think just with the way I live my life, every day, get up, work, get up, train, work. So I just coined few understand. I think very few do understand. And now that's sort of like caught on. Even one of my very good friends, one of my brothers, he made a baseball cap for me that says few. Oh, I should have worn that today. That would have been good.
Oh, really?
So it just sort of caught on. And I've seen people are also using it now. Few understand. And I think just few people do understand. I think when you go into this sort of monk mode of just really focusing on a single goal, or multiple goals, being it your health, you know, focusing on your work, your business, your empire, growing every single day, grinding, never-ending consistency. I think there are very few people that understand that. And when you coin this term of few understand, I think it makes people want to get involved with that as well.
Get into the club.
If I can inspire one person to start going to the gym, and by the looks of it, I've got a lot of people that have messaged me and contacted me and I've inspired them to start going to the gym. Mm. That makes me so happy. It makes me so happy.
Even me myself, I didn't do gymming since Corona, and you know, most of the people, you know, they went fat, and I mean, I was one.
They went
among
two
them.
Ways. They either got really fit or really fat.
Yeah. So I was one among them because, you know, I was a bit stressed out on business and things like that. Mm. So one of the influencers, I've seen her gymming, getting on it, and asking people to do. And I swear, and I'm like, you know what? Now this is the time. Let me renew the membership. Mm. So it does influence.
I noticed when that jacket was off, your arms are looking quite swole. You got some bazooka biceps under that jacket.
No, but still, I need to work a lot.
Yeah, but I can see the frame. You got the frame, man.
Thank you
got the frame.
So thank
you. How long have you been training for now?
Since 1 year now.
Okay.
Since 1 year.
Were you training?
In Fitness First.
Nice, okay.
Yeah. They didn't pay me to say this, but...
No,
so
okay.
So we cut this off.
There you go. Cut that out.
So what's your story, Charlie? We know you're associated with Bahrain Confidential. Looks like... You are also influencer of cars. I mean, I'm just your Instagram follower than a friend. So we are trying to get to know who are you exactly? You know, when did you start your journey?
Okay. I don't like to call myself an influencer. I like to make that very clear because I often get contacted by brands to do things.
But you influence some people to go into the gym. So you're an influencer.
Influential, maybe, but not one of these typical influencers. Maybe you can call me a content creator, which I enjoy doing. Okay. The whole car thing, I sort of fell into it. So I'll tell you my story. I'll brief it into sort of a 3 to 4 hours if you have the time.
It's okay.
So I moved to Bahrain. I was born and raised in the UK. I was actually born in the Isle of Man. Small island between Ireland and England.
One of my friend works there.
In the Isle of Man?
I think, yeah.
What does he do?
She works for a hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess my dad's always loved small tax-free islands. Isle of Man is famous for being tax-free.
It's tax-free.
Being a tax haven, perhaps. So anyway, born and raised in the UK, born in the Isle of Man, raised in the UK, 22 years of my life. And then when I was 22, in 2017, I moved to Bahrain. My dad's been here since 2001. He set up the business here 2001. Mum and dad separated when I was very, very young. Mm. So I'd always come to Bahrain for holidays in the summer.
And when your dad started, that is Bahrain Confidential?
Yes. Bahrain Confidential was the first publication he started.
It's a magazine, right?
Magazine. Okay. This is long before social media. But we had phones, but not the iPhones.
I used to go events and I wait for my photo in Bahrain Confidential, which never showed up.
Yeah. Oh, really?
We used to always wait. But I did once or twice. I remember. I think once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that was a big thing with the magazines.
It was
everyone would want to get the magazine to see their photo. Everyone tells me that.
You wouldn't believe 2008 or something.
Yeah.
I got photographer's number. I forgot his name. He's from Kerala as well.
Okay.
So then my friends were like, you know, just message him whenever you're in the event so that you get a photo.
Yeah.
I swear I remember.
That was a good contact to have, right?
Yeah, but we used to have a contact, but we never met.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very, very different back then. Yeah. Bahrain Confidential started as a quarterly publication. It wasn't the luxury lifestyle publication it is today. It was more of a guide. Because to sort of expand on that story, why my father launched, before Bahrain Confidential, he had London Confidential.
Okay.
And I was just on the phone with my father just to clarify the story that I had everything right. So London Confidential was a publication on a guide to London on things to do and places to go.
Okay.
Just realized how that sounds. London Confidential was a publication that was an agreement my father did with three airlines, Gulf Air, British Airways and KLM, flying from 22 different airports across the Middle East, going into London Heathrow. Now, London Confidential was a guide to London on, you know, things to do and places to go for things to do, people to see. maybe that's where it stems from, things to do, people to see, from my father. On a guide to London, and it was given to first class and business class passengers at check-in.
Okay.
So it was a complimentary guide and it was funded by advertising. And all the advertisers were places in London and the UK. Mm. Anyway, back then, before Dubai really took off, British Airways' hub was in Bahrain. So my father was coming to Bahrain a lot. A lot of the regional offices used to be in Bahrain, right? And then in the late 90s, early 2000s,
you mean the Middle East hub?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, he found himself coming to Bahrain more. And him and his then wife just fell in love with Bahrain. They found themselves spending more time here. And then eventually they launched Bahrain Confidential. They sort of stopped with London Confidential.
Okay.
And that was...
They stopped?
Yeah, they
Why
stopped.
Why would you stop such a big publication to Bahrain
good,
one?
Good question. Because it was, from what I hear, it was doing very, very well. But logistically, there were some problems. It was like sometimes they weren't handing it out at check-in. But there was at one point, my father told me, they got a call from like the CEO of British Airways back then to go to their offices in Waterside in London. To actually work out a deal to do it across the world. And my father said, he was like walking on air. He was like, wow, this is amazing. But then for whatever reason, logistically, it didn't work out. Sometimes these things, they don't last forever. But it did whilst it lasted. So then Bahrain Confidential was born. Bahrain Confidential now is sort of like this size, but back then it was smaller. It was a small... Okay. I remember coming out here as a kid, seeing all the boxes of Bahrain Confidential. So that was that. That's how that was born. And then Gulf Insider was launched as a business publication in 2004.
Gulf Insider is also a magazine or is it a newspaper?
Magazine. Okay. Yeah. I mean, a few years ago, we went from print first to social digital first. We print only on a seasonal basis for both Confidential and Gulf Insider. So that was the story of how it started. So I'd always come out here as a kid. And then...
What age did you come here?
I started coming here, so in 2001. When I moved here?
Yeah.
When I moved...
Moved in here for work.
Yeah, so I was 22. 2017.
Okay.
It was May 22nd, 2017.
Perfect.
And then I remember it was a week before Ramadan because that was a culture shock for me.
Right.
Yeah. But
it was hard to get food.
Yeah, I mean, I love Ramadan now. At the time, I never liked it, but I love it. It's a really, really
wonderful time. Over the years, you fell in love with the culture and...
I love this island. I work every day as much as I can to promote this island to the world. Yeah, this is home.
So, you know, everyone right now is, of course, going on social media, going more on tech side. What have Bahrain Confidential done under your leadership, let's say, getting there?
Yeah, I mean, if you look from the outside, if you zoom out, it's basically just digitizing the company. But it's always funny when you look at businesses from the outside, everything looks so easy and it's like, oh, they did this, right? But from the inside, it was operationally, it was quite difficult to make that change because everyone knows that we're print or that we were print. And, you know, it was really during COVID because I remember during COVID, I was like, right, this is our excuse now. No more print. Everything goes online. Easy. And COVID was a tough time.
So you
right?
don't have print anymore?
No, we do, but on a seasonal basis.
Okay.
So during COVID, true story, I remember saying, print's finished. We're moving everything online. This was the call, right? COVID was tough.
Yeah, COVID was a good excuse for everyone to get on tech.
Exactly, yeah. So we shifted everything online. But contrary to what is, you know, probably common belief now, a lot of brands, some brands, they still really wanted print. So I was like, huh, but I can't go. So I sort of like scratched my head. Then I thought, hang on a sec. We can print our publications on a seasonal basis.
Okay.
Such as for our restaurant awards. Which is now confirmed for 10th of December. I'd love to invite you as a guest. I'll make sure you're there. It's a wonderful event. For our education awards, we have the Golf Insider Education Awards. And then we print sort of periodically for like Ramadan for National Day. So you can say quarterly. And it works out well because some brands, they want to be in print. But
and when you're doing seasonal print, where do you publish this? Like keep this in supermarkets or... How does it go on membership model? How does this go?
Yeah, good question. So in media, there's two really ways to commercialize it. You have subscriptions or advertising. We're funded by advertising. So it's about probably a 90% or even 95% free distribution. So we distribute through, we have a distribution network.
On what capacity in terms of percentage are you printing from pre-COVID to now? Like, what is the person?
Pre-COVID, we were printing two magazines every single month. Bahrain Confidential and Golf Insider were coming out every single month. We'd go to the press at the end of the month and they'd be out the first few days of the month.
No, I'm saying in terms of numbers, let's say.
Numbers, yeah, okay.
What kind of percentage are you running at? Like 20%, 10% or 50%?
Okay,
or still
in terms of the maths across the year, I mean, it was very different because now we're printing seasonally. But in terms of per copy, how many we're printing, pre-COVID, we were doing 12,000 copies per publication.
Wow.
Now I think it's between 10 to 11,000. But
so
it's
almost like same.
Oh, yeah, the same.
So
you're saying
that people still would love to read the book with their hands?
Mm-hmm.
Like the magazines?
Yeah, really? We get really good feedback. Because again, when we print, it's for something worthwhile. We are printing for the restaurant awards. Everyone wants to see, you know, which are the restaurants, what happened.
Yeah.
If it's for, we're working on a publication now called Business Leaders in the Middle East, which is, I'll send you some copies once it's out. We interview high profile business people, not just in Bahrain, but across the region. CEOs and managing directors of some of the biggest companies
in
the region.
And these magazines go out in the Middle East as well or just stay in Bahrain?
Mostly in Bahrain.
Mostly.
We have a small distribution in the eastern province of Saudi.
Okay.
But online, Golf Insider's online presence is regional.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what have you said that to you, how you have digitized? Is it on a website or how?
Website and social media.
Okay. Yeah, is this subscription based?
No. Everyone has access.
Everyone has access.
You can go on the website immediately. We're purely advertising.
So are you a news agency like any other news agency?
You could say so. We call ourselves a media house.
Okay.
The other side of our business is we have a marketing agency called Fabianca, which specializes in social media marketing.
Is this founded by you?
By my father.
Okay.
But...
So you're second generation of your business, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. But the agency wasn't really doing a huge amount when I moved here 8 years ago.
Mm.
It was like small amounts project basis, but I brought it to life. And the story of how that came around... is around the time I moved here, you know, with like hotels and so on. I won't name any names, but we'd have like 12-month advertising contracts. Mm. And at the time, we had the fastest growing social media platform, actually Facebook at the time. We had the biggest Facebook platform in the kingdom.
Oh.
And again, I won't name names.
Even until date?
Until date, we have some of the largest. Yeah, I think Golf Insider is about 500,000 on Facebook, barring confidential.
Seriously.
Facebook is only big mostly with sort of expats and British Americans.
Mostly.
From people from this region, not so much. So anyway, so some of the hotels, they would come to me sort of saying, look, we've noticed you've got a very big social, can you help us? And we had like these advertising contracts. I was like, yeah, okay, you know, sort of just doing them a favor. And then I thought, hang on a second, there's a business here. We should be commercializing this. So then was born, and it was very young at the time, social media marketing and management.
Yeah.
So we took on certain accounts. So that is something I've really developed. And then about 3 or 4 years is our influencer marketing and management. So we have a network of influencers that we do collaborations with.
Great.
We do marketing campaigns, even on an ad hoc basis. A brand will come to us. You can come to us saying, right, I'm launching this product to this audience. And then we will pitch a campaign and a brand. And that's fun work because you see it from concept to completion, the planning, and then you see the result.
Yeah.
Because the good thing about digital and social, you have all the metrics. How many shares,
yeah,
you know, if there's a call to action, it's yeah, magical stuff.
It's all detailed.
Yeah, I call it, or it's known to be performance marketing. Yeah.
You said you're a second generation of your family business. Like, we don't see that much often. I mean...
Don't you? Don't you see that often?
Not nowadays. Like people, children need. You know, they're choosing their own path. And the businesses stay obsolete, but there are businesses, of course, successfully going like fourth and fifth generation in India. India, it's more common though.
Yes.
So, how's it like? Did you ever feel like, no, I don't want to, like, even in between, like, I want to do something of my own?
Yeah.
Or no, this is what I want to do. I believe in this stuff. I mean, it's quite a bit, you know, because you need to understand what your father started and to continue at his legacy or, you know, the company's legacy.
Yeah.
How was it like?
Initially, it was exactly like that. And I don't think I've told this story before, but when my father first asked me if I wanted to move to Bahrain and join his business, I was like, I don't want to work for my dad's business. I'm like, what? No, I want to do my own thing, right?
Yeah, this is what, this is the exact thing.
Yeah.
This is the exact thing which
yeah, it was exactly that. No, you're absolutely right. I think that's the common thing. But I remember coming out here on a sort of a vacation again when I was 21, 22. And I was like, no, I want to live here. I always wanted to, look, the UK is a great place to be from, but not to live. That's another conversation. So,
like India,
maybe. Well, India's pumping now. It's your economy's just overtaken Britain's. What, like last year?
Really?
I think. Yeah,
I know that they are at peak. Absolutely. When I went to India back then, it was amazing.
Like, and superstar talent. Yeah. Superstar talent. Yeah. So, what was I talking about? Yeah. So, he offered me a job. I was sort of like, what? No. But I was polite. I was like, yeah, okay, I'll think about it. And then I sort of came here on a vacation, see my dad again, and I was like, actually, I want to leave the UK. This could be good. I've always loved media. So I just went with it. And then I guess I just sort of joined as a sort of learning the ropes. And then now, I mean, I'm very lucky because I know I have friends that work in family businesses. They're always arguing, fighting, disagreements. Me and my father, son, best friends, 50-50 business partners.
I had this for 5 years.
Clashing with the family.
Well, yeah. And me and my dad over the businesses.
Yeah. It's very common. I don't know. Yeah. We've got a very... If I think about it, I think the reason why we get on so well and we almost never, knock on wood, never we never argue is because he's pretty much retired, semi-retired now. If he still had the passion that I do, then we're going to have disagreements.
Yeah.
But because he's somewhat detached from the business, he gives me quite a bit of free rein, unless if there's sort of major decisions or if I need to go to him for advice.
Yeah, two captains on a ship never works, you know.
Oh, that's a good analogy. I like that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard this. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What is this oh, yeah coming from, huh?
All right. That is from... Did you ever watch one of my favorite films, Clint Eastwood? What was it called? Gran Torino?
No.
There's a scene where there's some guys causing some trouble with some girl. And he's like, you know, leave her alone. And they sort of ignore him. So he sort of gets out the car, he goes to defuse the situation, and they're not listening. Then he pulls out a gun, and then they back off. So they leave the girl. And then when he walks back in the car, you'll have to play the scene. I'll send it to you whilst the podcast shows.
Yeah, yeah.
But he does this thing where he pulls out his fingers, and he goes like that. Then he puts the gun away, and then he shuts the door, and he goes, oh, yeah. Like Clint Eastwood, like, oh, yeah. So anyway, that always stuck in my head.
You kept practicing.
So now,
So now that's Charlie's thing now.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, well, it originates from Clint Eastwood. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not coming yet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. We'll have to play the scene.
Let me have some caffeine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Make sure you play that. So people don't think we're nuts. There is actually a scene where it comes from in Gran Torino.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
So where do we leave off? The second generation...
Second generation, an interesting thing on that. I don't know if you've heard, I think we finished that, yeah. But one interesting thing with, I don't know if you've heard this before, there's a saying, it's obviously sometimes it's not true, but most of the time apparently it is true. You have the business founder, okay? They found the business, they make a successful business. Then you have the next generation who learns from the founder and then they continue the legacy. Yeah. Then apparently it's basically the founder's grandson that quite often sort of wrecks the business because they weren't as direct with the founder. Because you have the founder vision, then you have, this is something I heard, I don't know how true it is, I need to look into it, but I've heard it multiple times, but it sounds right, doesn't it?
Possible, because, you know, I don't know, I mean, most of the businesses, the ideas, you know, it doesn't go consistent with the times, right? It goes a bit different, it goes a bit off, but...
Isn't that the same with all businesses?
I don't know.
I mean, all businesses, they change. I mean, there's many...
I've seen Reliance, you know Reliance, right?
No.
Mukesh Ambani, the grand wedding which was done in India.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
the whole world talked about.
Yeah.
So Mukesh, he had two sons. Dhirubhai Ambani is the founder of Reliance. Mm. They are like, he's like top three or top five richest men in India now. Mm. Mukesh Ambani. Mm-hmm. But Mukesh Ambani's father, Dhirubhai Ambani, started off. From now, they are into petrochemicals, they are into garments, they are into telecom. You have no idea. They are into everything now, you know. So he has two sons, Anil Ambani and Mukesh Ambani. Mm. And after a time, they split. But now Anil Ambani is kind of broke. Mukesh Ambani is like over the top. Mm. So, I mean, I think it depends on the person.
It depends. It's not always true. Yeah. But it's just like a thing that people say. But businesses do have to evolve. I mean, you look at the tech giants now. They're all trying to jump into the AI race. Because AI is going to be the next big thing. Mm. Or is now the big thing. And whilst it's very early days and it's very sort of text-based.
Every businesses right now, when they pitch to investors or they pitch to customers, they have to add a hint of AI.
Yeah, it's like a buzzword, isn't it?
Yeah,
AI.
It's a buzzword.
Yeah, I should start doing that.
By the way, we have an AI feature. You don't have an AI feature? Bahrain Confidential?
Yeah. It's like a buzzword, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's funny how people talk about it now and still don't know. Have you seen that famous clip on this talk show? I think it was in the US. And it was like 2000 or 1999. And they're like, yeah, so the internet, the World Wide Web, you know, is this really good? And there was like articles in 1998 saying that the internet is just going to be a fad. So, yeah, we're still in the very early days. And I heard, who was it that said this? Was it Bill Gates? Anyway, some tech guy said that where we are now with, I'm trying to remember who said it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Mm. Where we are now with AI is where we were with the internet in 1996, I think they said. Mm. You know? It's very interesting. If only we had hindsight as foresight, so we could see what was going to happen.
Exactly, what's going to happen.
Let me get in my time machine.
It's interesting with print publications. I mean, no one in the right mind would start it now.
No.
So all those companies that existed, like you continue, right?
Yeah.
Because, and you also have chosen to get into tech.
Yes. Yeah.
So that means you don't have any competition.
How do we not have competition?
I mean, you don't have much of competition. You don't have newcomers in the field.
True.
Does that help you?
Yeah.
Or do you have challenges of having it still printed?
When we do printed publications, we do quite well because we really work hard at making them special. And we have a fantastic team. By the way, a lot of people sort of see me
making
as
it special means what? You put some fragrance and I don't know.
Yeah, some fragrance. Yeah, some fragrance. We put a few dinars inside, you know. 100 fills.
Give away.
No, we just really work hard at creating good editorial content, whether it's relating to our events or so on. But I would just say that with our publications or digital media platforms, a lot of people see me and know me, but nothing happens without the team that we have. We have a superstar, super talented team that put everything together. You know, I'm just a fan. I don't do anything.
When I joined my dad's business, I fired very important people.
Why?
I don't know, because they were stealing.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something.
I'm not saying like such a thing happened with you.
Yeah.
But did you do a major makeover like how Elon Musk has done with the Twitter or something like that?
That was fantastic, wasn't it? That was fantastic. Yeah.
I mean, did you have to do that or did you just manage with the existing employees?
No, we've got new employees since then as the requirements that we look for have changed with wanting more people that are social media native and even Gen Z and so on. But no, I mean, I get a lot from my father. My father's always sort of ran, you know, he hasn't held on to any dead wood or always focused on hiring talent.
So you didn't have any...
I didn't have to do an Elon Musk, no. I didn't have to go and clear the shop.
You didn't have any people that had old mindsets that they don't want to change and, you know, they were adaptive.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, Yeah, they were no, we've got a really good, obviously we've got a lot of new people since then, and now our company's growing and we're still recruiting at the moment for new staff as we take on more clients. But really blessed to have, I think that's such a wonderful thing when you have a company or you have a business or you wherever you work, when you have somewhere that you really genuinely look forward to going to every single day. Like, I can honestly say that every single day, okay, we do have bad days. Once every 50 days, let's say, I'll probably think, oh, rather not go to work. But I have things to do. I have people to see. I have places to be. But no, genuinely, almost every day, I love going to work. Love the things that we do and the brands we work with, and most importantly, the team that we have.
Are you a fun boss or are you a Steve Jobs kind of a boss?
Maybe a bit of both. What's a Steve Jobs?
He used to be harsh. I mean, he used to say to the engineer straight away that this looks like piece of shit.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah. No, I
fire you. You know, yeah. You might have seen that.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty easy to go. I used to... I think when I first, these are things I've never talked about before. When I first moved,
world's local exclusive, buddy. You need to pay for this now.
When I first moved to Bahrain and I joined the business, you know, I was young. I was sort of, you know, you get aggressive quite easily. I've obviously never shouted at anyone. I'm pretty chill.
But I
would treat people in certain ways that I would not do now. You know, whether it's like addressing an issue, and I think even. You know, see, as you get older, you get wiser. So, you know, my mannerisms, I've always been pretty chill, but I've gotten a lot better at dealing with certain situations. But no, I'd like to think I'm, what is it that David Brent, did you ever watch The Office, the UK Office?
No.
Oh, are you more into
America? We'll play that as well.
Yeah, you need to play this. It's David Brent, he's so funny. Because you have The Office, people in this region prefer the American Office, but the UK Office I find hilarious. It's very dry humour, but he always used to say, yeah, I'm a, what did he say? I'm a chilled out entertainer. Basically, The Office UK, he's just really cringe. And all he wants to do is be loved by everyone, but everyone hates him. Mm. That's not the case in my, well, maybe it is. Maybe everyone in the company hates me. I don't know. But yeah, no, we have a good time.
Okay.
I always like to say, you know, we know where we're going. We know what we're doing, but we're having fun whilst we're doing it. And that's a philosophy really.
Especially
in my life.
And the media, I mean, the fun element should show out as a result as well. I mean, if you have unhappy employees and... You know,
it's going to reflect,
it could reflect, right?
Yeah, it's going to show. Because also the media we're in, we're not like a newspaper, or we're not focusing on...
It's although not we serious do, stuff.
Golf yet. Insider covers quite a lot of like serious news, but ultimately we are luxury lifestyle publications. So we get to do sort of fun stuff, whether it's events or restaurants or cars.
Why you were invited in Lamborghini factory? I mean, what have I done wrong that I was not invited?
Do you know how many people message me saying, can I be your assistant? Can I be your plus one? That do you know what? I have to say, working in media, I've done some of the most incredible trips of my life and been some of the most incredible places in my life as a media guest.
So that places to be worked?
It certainly does. Certainly does. Places to be, cars to drive, Lamborghinis
cars to drive.
Lamborghinis to drive. But yeah, that was a wonderful event. That was...
Did you get the invite from the local dealership?
Or no, this was from head office, from Sant'Agata Bolognese. They taught me how to say that. I was shooting some content and I said Sant'Agata Bolognese. And they're like, no, if you're going to do it, say it properly. They're like, Sant'Agata Bolognese. So, no, it came from the factory.
That is.
Yeah. That's the town. That's where the Lamborghini factory is. Which is really interesting because the Lamborghini factory, it's in a small little like village called Sant'Agata Bolognese.
It looked like,
And has nothing really... There's not much there, but Lamborghini's there. So everything's about Lamborghini. It's the same if you go to the Ferrari factory.
So they farm Lamborghinis.
Sorry?
They farm Lamborghinis.
They farm Lamborghinis. Yeah, they just churn them out. And it was fascinating doing the... I did the production line tour and you see the craftsmanship
and the
level of care. Yeah, it's really, really fantastic. So, no, it was a trip of a lifetime. So we got to drive the new Revolto and then also the V12 history. Countach, Murcielago. Yeah, it was awesome. Trip of a lifetime. Childhood dream come true.
But you have been also invited for other international tours for the cars, right?
Yeah.
What connection has this to do with the Bahrain Confidential? Or is it something of personal what you have done? Like a car vlogging? I've seen some car vlogging things coming out of your social media.
To be honest, I think that, okay, so to answer your question, we are leading media publications. So when there is a car launch, and we do a lot in automotive, when there is a car launch, they want to create awareness. So they need media there. So... when they do these launches, and automotive is something we have a niche on. My father used to do quite a lot of this, by the way, but he was a sort of traditional media, so more written.
This is what also comes on Bahrain Confidential as well.
And Golf Insider. We cover automotive on both platforms. So anyway, I'd start doing these trips when I moved here, and then, you know, they wanted to invite me, not my father, because I'm more in the new generation of media. And then I started doing a lot more social media content, but now I've built this sort of small presence. So, It's with the PR for when these brands launch cars, they need awareness. And then there's these certain automotive bloggers in the region that
they
will
cover
these.
They also give
you
cars to drive off.
Yeah.
Do they pay you? Or is it like just...
What do you mean when we do these trips?
Yeah.
Yeah, if we're doing these trips, no, often they're not paid because they expect, you know, they're covering your, you know, expenses and travel and so on. So they expect the coverage in return. Locally and regionally, we do a lot of commercial business with the car brands, whether it's the dealerships or the regional offices.
I've heard is like the supercars, you know, supercar brands, they don't pay for ads, but the Chinese and the other brands pay you more. Is that true?
The Chinese brands?
For the media and ads.
Yeah, okay. So the Chinese brands have very big budgets, yeah. Because they're going into a market that's, or their market's dominated by the Japanese and somewhat maybe the Korean, or now the luxury segment, the Germans and so on. Anyway, so basically Chinese cars didn't exist, say, much 10 years ago.
Yeah. Now it's all over the road.
Now it's all over the road.
Have you seen Jetour? It's J2, right?
They're gorgeous cars. I haven't driven them yet, so I can't comment on how they drive, okay. But they're gorgeously designed. And it's getting very hard now, because it's very interesting what's happening in the market, because the Japanese brands, their market share is shrinking. And when I first drove a Chinese car 7-8 years ago, there was some turbo lag, the build quality wasn't quite right, it was a bit clunky. You know, now I'm driving them. I remember the first time when I realized how good they're getting, a few years ago, 3 years ago,
Is it also good in the driving comfort and also the performance-wise?
Yeah, so in that category, so two, three years ago, I was driving an MG RX-5 as a journalist. Mm. And I was like, wow, this drives so nicely, comfortable. And I was in the UK earlier this year and I was driving an MG, I forget the name, it was just a hire car. I just booked a whatever cheap hire car I could get and they gave me this MG. So I picked it up at Heathrow. And the seats, man, all leather interiors, like in Mercedes AMG seats. I always have manual when I'm in the UK.
But you know, my question is, when you hit the gas, does it move? Like, does it move like the other cars, or is it just like?
Are you talking here about performance?
Performance, yeah.
Okay, no, you can't compare like an MG RX-5 to like a McLaren or a Ferrari.
Not McLaren, at least you know, let's say Toyota RAV4.
Yeah, yeah, they move. Camry, they move. Yeah, they have good performance. Yeah. I mean, what these Chinese brands have done is they've Hongqi, for example. I don't know if you know Hongqi.
Yeah,
that's a luxury.
Rolls-Royce of China.
Yeah, you could say that. And in fact, what they did is they took Rolls-Royce's, I think I've got this story right, they took Rolls-Royce's lead designer from Goodwood and said, come work for us, help us build these cars. So they've got...
The Chinese president drives on it.
Yes, correct. You know what Hongqi means?
No, I don't know.
It means red flag, which sort of doesn't sound good, but red flag is something to do, presidential. Yeah.
How many contacts do you have in your phone? Let's see. The media person has the more contacts or me?
How do you look at how many contacts you have?
So get on the contacts.
Yeah.
And keep tapping it so until it becomes like the whole number.
What do you mean?
Sure.
Okay. Oh. Okay. Yeah. 2,792.
So.
You got 10,000.
Now you can come back with me, Nimshid. That's not the quantity of contacts; it's quality.
It's the quality, not the quantity. These are quality contacts, my friend.
See,
my mom, my dad, my sisters.
I'm helping you with the line. It's because from Corona, I had e-commerce business.
Yeah.
So there's a WhatsApp business which goes on there.
Yeah.
And the normal WhatsApp, and the WhatsApp business, I.
Yeah. Okay.
On the ads.
Yeah, for sure.
I keep getting and I keep saving them.
I just want to go back to something you were talking about when you're talking about delegation. I learned this, I was listening to this book that I strongly recommend. I was doing the audiobook on Audible. It's by a guy called Dan Martell. He's worth listening to. It's called Buy Back Your Time. And he explains this thing because delegation, it's an easy thing to say you need to delegate, but it's quite hard to do because you believe, and it may be quite rightly so, you believe no one can do it better than you, right?
Exactly.
That's what we all believe as business runners and business owners. But what he says is, he goes, let's say that's true. What you want to put in mind, if you can find someone and delegate it to them and train them, and let's say they can do it to 70 or 80% of your ability. So it's not 100%, but 80%.
That's enough, yeah.
It's enough, right?
Yeah.
So if you can get someone, delegate 80%, it's not 100%, but you get 100% of your time. So what he says is, find someone that can do it at the capacity of 80%, you get 100% of your time, and that's 100% freaking awesome, as he says. How good is that, right?
It is true.
Sure, you're going to lose a little, whether it's revenue or profit or whatever, but you get 100% of your time.
Yeah.
That, my friend, is leverage. And leverage is the power to scale and growth.
If I didn't delegate the other business, there is no way that I'm doing podcast today. So we were talking about your car the story with the cars and
yeah, okay,
how
yeah,
did you get there?
Something I want to sort of clarify.
How are you getting this premium invites? Am I getting a plus one one day?
There's only one Charles Henry Cooksey, my friend. There's only one Charles Henry Cooksey. So something I want to clarify, because I get asked a lot, what is it with you and cars? I guess I've sort of become, I like to say, part-time automotive journalist, right? But when I grew up, I never really was that fussed about cars. To be honest, I wasn't really, some of my friends were crazy about cars. But it was funny, when I moved here and joined the company and started working with these brands, you know, not long after moving here, I'd be like driving a Ferrari. So I'd post it on my social media. My friends in the UK be like, I'm not going to swear, you know. They're like, ha, you're not really that fussed about cars. So anyway, so long story short, after a couple of years, or even just within 6 to 12 months of working closely with the brands, I fell in love with the automotive industry. I would still never call myself a petrol head. A petrol head is someone that's just like nuts about cars. Mm. Actually, maybe I'm becoming a petrol head. But anyway, I don't like to call myself a petrol head. I just have a fascination. I find cars so interesting, and I find the industry very interesting, especially now, because it's so competitive for two reasons. Yeah. One, the Chinese products, yeah, which is changing the market. Two, electrification, where there's all sorts. I mean, that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I fell in love with the industry and then also started doing a lot of content myself. So I sort of developed this niche and fell into it. And I love the industry and I love cars. They're fun,
and
right?
They're loving you as well. They're inviting you.
I hope
you.
So.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think you are the supercar blondie of Bahrain.
I can go with that, yeah. Well, I've been called the Jeremy Clarkson of Bahrain. I like that one. That's cool.
Perfect.
Yeah, you know who Jeremy Clarkson is, right?
No.
Oh, man.
I think most of the things.
Actually,
I need a lot of subtitles and a BIP images.
Yeah, to be fair, it's a very British thing. So we had a show called Top Gear, Jeremy Clarkson.
Top Gear, yes.
Do you remember the British guy, tall guy, quite controversial?
Yes.
So one of the best, probably the best automotive.
Where are those guys? I mean, finished? They are getting old or what?
Oh, no, it's a funny story. I think he got kicked off. The show got cancelled by the BBC. Stupid decision. The BBC, generally speaking, is stupid. Mm. Maybe you want to cut that out. This is kind of controversial. It's kind of funny, but basically, do you know the Falklands War that happened with Britain going to war with the Falklands? It was a war between Argentina and Britain. Anyway, okay, we've got these very small islands, the British. They're British territory off the coast of Argentina, the Falklands Islands. Argentina in 1982 went to war with, went to invade the Falklands and take them back. But Britain, under Margaret Thatcher, said, no, we're going to fight this war, and won the war. Anyway, that's that bit of history. Jeremy Clarkson was doing a car event in Argentina and was driving around these cars with a number plate. He says it was an accident, which was like FKR or something, Falklands, or Falklands, 1982, because he's a Brit, basically saying, you know, we won the war. And he got so much stick for it. I mean, I found it quite funny. He's got a dark sense of humor. And after that, he got in a lot of trouble from the BBC.
Okay.
So yeah, funny. So look at, I might have butchered that a bit, but it's something like that. He was basically trolling. I mean, that is some serious trolling, the Argentinians. Nothing against the Argentinians. I've got, you know, Argentinians are wonderful people. So anyway, I don't know if I'm going to get cancelled for something. Yeah, you have to be so careful today, man. People are so easily offended.
Tell me about it.
But I like to just, you know, I believe you do well to other people. What you say, I was always brought up, sticks and stones may break my bones, names won't do any harm. So like when I was a kid, when I was in high school, at one point I was like kind of fat and I was never bullied. But I remember someone saying, oh, you're fat. I'd be like, yeah, okay. You know, but you could go to another person and say, you're fat, and they start like crying. But it's just like, it's words. Mm. Now, if someone came up to me, say you're someone that's easily offended and I'm not, but someone came up to us and stuck a knife in us. Mm. Doesn't matter what you think, that is going to hurt. You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
With feelings and taking offense, you do have a choice. Again, that's apparently controversial to say, but it's true. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But it's like, different from person to person, right? Where you say things, especially in this part of Ireland, like but we understand it more because we see different types of nationalities every day.
Yes.
So we tend to keep that, you know, breaks over
because we
don't know in what culture, what gets offended, right?
Yeah. I'm not, by the way, saying people should go out and actively offend people. I mean, that's just not a nice thing to do. But I think people choose to take offense very easily that don't need to be. Like, for example, I could be watching something on TV, right? And I could find it very funny. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
The person next to me would be like, oh, that's horrible.
That's awful.
It's like,
yeah, you shouldn't have done that. Yeah.
People have been programmed to take offense. It's like, man, you know what? Like, life's short. Life's really, really short. And people take themselves too seriously.
You know, I have got comments, and some comments I don't understand whether it is hate comment or the like supportive comment, like with this especially the Gen Z abbreviations and things like that.
Yeah,
I asked ChatGPT, what is the feel of this message? The one message would be like, yeah, no, he's making fun of you. Then the other one would be like, no, this is a supportive message. This is not that. I would always talk and negotiate, and because, you know, I don't want to backfire off a supportive message, you know?
Yeah.
So that got me thinking.
Talking don't pay too much attention to comments, man. They can drag you down.
No, but I know I like, nowadays I'm waiting for some controversial comments. Like, okay, I ask my friends to please do some controversial comment.
Mm.
I mean, that helps you grow.
That's what I've understood.
So
yeah.
I'm waiting for. So whenever you see, don't send me hearts and claps and all that.
Yeah.
Say, what a stupid guy.
Yeah. I'll do that. I'm gonna start supporting you.
And then I will say thank you on your DM. I will put a crying emoji and then I'll say thank you on your DM.
Yeah, yeah. Your next post, I'm gonna put some angry comments.
What a dumb guy.
Yeah, this guy's stupid. Don't listen to him. Yeah.
Talking about offending people, have you ever used wrong pronouns in West?
I'm probably one of the most politically incorrect people you'll meet. No, I don't. Do you know what's funny? For a couple of years, on my personal Instagram, I used to have pronouns she/her.
Really?
Yeah, just trolling. Taking the mickey, right? I had that for a couple of years.
Sorry if I've called you bro.
This stuff doesn't faze me. So I had that in my Instagram maybe for about a year, and it was purely trolling, having a laugh. But I had some friends that didn't quite maybe understand my terrible British sense of humor. And they would say, you know, message me, Charlie, by the way, I've noticed that you have, you know, your pronouns. I don't know, maybe she thought that I was like
trans. So they were
trans.
Serious, yeah. They thought it was serious.
I was like, no, it's a joke. I'm just trolling the people that take this stuff seriously. And anyway, then I removed it. Even like brands that I work with, they sort of find it fun. I mean, that's the thing. I don't take myself too seriously, right? But no, I had to remove it because people actually thought that I was a she/her. But the West has gone mad, man. The West is... This is another thing I like about this this region.
Yeah, they don't accept this.
Yeah, you still have...
Like even in the curriculum, when it tried to come, the Minister of Education really...
Yeah, quite right.
They banned it.
You have conservative values. Although these words, conservative and liberal, they keep changing. I mean, I don't actually know what they mean anymore. Because I've always said that I'm a liberal. I believe in live and let live. You do what you want to do.
We respect.
Don't promote it.
Yeah, but don't come to our children... Yeah. But don't come and, you know, shove us down with your values, right?
This is what I believe. We don't
have to necessarily do that.
I've got friends from all walks of life, and what they do, what they want to do is their own business behind closed doors. But my problem is when it starts having to be promoted. So, you know, liberal, as a kid, I would say, yeah, live and let live, I'm a liberal. But now the current definition of liberal, no, I'm like a super conservative, apparently.
Wow. Is it because of the region?
I've always been that way. I've always I don't know. I've always believed in it's really, you know, really extreme ideas like men should be men, women should be women. Mm. It's really crazy, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I believe in things like, you know, providing good education to children and not trying to indoctrinate them. I know, very extreme again to believe these things. It's very crazy to think these things. So I've always sort of believed in, you know, just the things that we've believed for thousands of years. It's like, you know,
suddenly it has a change.
Yeah, it's like saying, you know, water's wet and people are, oh. Anyway.
Do you love Tesla? Have you ever driven Tesla?
Do you know what? I've driven a lot
Are you the same guy, kind of a person? Tesla, why they would make electric cars?
Yeah.
You know, you need some gasoline.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 you know?
Yeah, it's become a thing, hasn't
Are you that kind of a guy?
No, I'm not. And the way I overcame that, I've driven a lot of EVs. So I've never actually driven a Tesla yet, but I'd love to. I've been inside of them. I was always sort of against EVs. I didn't understand them.
Okay.
But then my mind was simple. I was put in peace. My mind was at peace because I realized they're just two different products. Mm. You have ICE. ICE is internal combustion engine. So you have petrol cars and you have electric cars. Two different products. Okay. So there is a lot of hatred against EVs.
Why?
Do you know what the Luddites were? Have you heard the term the Luddites?
No.
I'm going to butcher this. But the Luddites were when you had the... Was it the agricultural or industrial revolution? I'm going to butcher this a bit. But anyway, the Luddites were, you had these, I'm really going to butcher this, but you had these workers that were just basically producing flour, but then you had these mills which would basically automate it and make it easier.
Okay, yeah.
Basically an advancement in technology.
Industrial revolution.
Exactly. You had an advancement in technology, and you had these people that were protesting against the technology, and I can't remember why, but they were called the Luddites. So
this is the way
things go. So people that go against it, essentially you could say they're Luddites. I'm going to get a lot of hate for this. But one thing I will state is I don't like how the electrification is being pushed for the first time ever in the automotive industry. The industry is being led by politicians, not by the engineers. And whenever things are being led when it comes to industry or technological advancements by politicians, not engineers, it never usually works out. Because what's happening is these big brands in Germany or whatever, they are being told, certainly in Europe and the US, they've been given these restrictions saying you can only produce a car within this amount. So basically, imagine building a product, but you've got the ceiling you can hit. You can't. So,
but isn't it basically thinking good about environment so that, you know?
What do you mean?
I mean, it's within the interest of the environment, right? And now every company has ESG standards and things like that.
Yeah,
so
but this
probably that's why they are giving a cap. You cannot produce these many gasoline or the petrol cars.
Are electric cars totally clean for the environment? It's a question.
It's not now, I think, because it boils down to a thing where basically we say, where are you getting the electricity from?
Exactly, right?
Yeah?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's coming from maybe a coal mine.
It's about the quantity, like how much of this is happening or, you know, we don't know exactly. We don't have any stats to prove that is this really clean. But if you didn't work out on this, I mean, this is how things change, right? I mean,
I think
it's in very initial stage to say it is a clean energy car.
Yes, it is. And, you know, if it's like purely solar, then that's totally clean, right? But it depends on how much energy is used or where the energy's come from. But something they talk about is carbon, right? So is carbon good?
Carbon footprint, yeah.
Yeah, is carbon good or is it bad?
I mean, we are told it is bad.
Why is it bad?
Carbon footprint, I mean, you know, less the carbon.
But if I ask you, because this is like brainwashing, it's told us it's bad.
Yeah.
If I ask you now, is carbon bad? How is it bad? What would your answer be? I'm putting you on the spot here, but it's not a trick question.
I don't know. I mean, probably it is, again, is the environment. The environment gets polluted.
Mm. But carbon naturally is in the environment, right?
Yeah, it is.
So carbon, we're told, and I ask this question to people a lot, and they never really give me a clear answer. Same as what you just did to me now. It's not a trick question. But carbon is naturally in the atmosphere, okay? And so if I ask you, what percentage of the atmosphere is carbon? Do you know? Have a guess.
Bro, I didn't.
Have a guess. Just have a wild guess. What would you think? Have a guess. What percentage of the atmosphere is carbon?
Right now?
Maybe at any given time. Yeah, it's a standard.
50, 60 or 30?
Percent.
30, let's say.
Percent,
30.
Yeah? Okay. You're way off. About 70% of the atmosphere is nitrogen.
Okay.
Nitrogen or hydrogen? My science is off. Anyway. Yeah. Carbon is...
I can search that up if you want.
Actually, can we... I need to get this right. Someone, I'm thinking about multiple different things.
So what's that called? Gas percentage?
No. Because I don't want you to know the answer yet.
Huh?
Hang on. Let me look it up. Put your phone down. hydrogen.
Man. I feel like I'm back to my science class.
Here we go. I'm pretty sure... No, it's nitrogen. I hate having to stop when I'm on like a bloody roll. Spitting straight facts. Yes, it is nitrogen. I was right. It is nitrogen. Okay. So the atmosphere is made up 80% of nitrogen. It's predominantly nitrogen. Carbon, when I ask that question, people will say, like you said, 30% or 60%, or maybe we say they're 10%. Carbon is not even 1/10 of 1% of the atmosphere.
What?
Carbon is 0.03 or 4% of the atmosphere.
Why are we so worried about
it? It's less than 1/10 of the atmosphere. And if carbon falls below, I think it's 0.02 or 0.03, all vegetation will die. You need carbon because trees and vegetation take in carbon and breathe out oxygen, right? And it's funny because I've been with, I'm not going to name any names here, but I've been with some people from some very big brands, from board level, and I've met some very, you know, big dogs in the industry. And I've asked the same question because they're talking about green energy and they don't even answer that question. Correct.
Yeah, it's not like no one is clear. Everyone wants to, because we run also a sustainability partnership with companies, being a recycling company, you know. But we are having actionable steps like taking their recyclables.
Yes.
And, you know,
that's a great initiative.
Taking their used items which is written off their stocks, and we sell it for them at a higher price, you know. So we have some actionable stuff.
Yeah, I think,
but
I think
when you go in details, like no one knows exactly what is clear. Like you said right now about carbon, we need it, and it's less than 1%.
Yeah, less than 1/10 of 1%.
1/10 of 1%.
Yes,
it's surprising. So, no one talks about it.
This is the issue with things like sustainability. Just to be clear on the record, I am of course pro sustainability, anti pollution. But when you talk about it, it's the vehicle or the mechanism in which it's delivered. Because a lot of people, they're just buzzwords. And this is what I see as sort of mainstream media brainwashing. They don't actually know what's behind it. They just say these, but sustainability, green energy, you know.
Go green.
Yeah, go green. But there's sort of about, like in Germany, I don't know if you saw a few weeks ago, they just closed down and detonated one of their last nuclear power plants, which is just crazy.
Interesting.
Anyway, that's my rant.
Man, you have more information than me on these standards. I mean, I should have known that better.
Yeah. But I think, you know what, just to put a cherry on the top of that, I think the main issue with that whole subject, I think that the big problem is pollution. I think pollution is a real problem. And
like, especially for my recycling thing, what I say is like, before you get into recycling, throw at least your trash in your dustbin, not over the roads.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So, yeah, I see that a lot.
Yeah, these are the main things you need to have, like the basic things.
Yeah.
We teach basically recycling.
Oh, nice. That's a good initiative. Yeah. Good work. Yeah, okay. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, inshallah one day.
Yeah, yeah.
I have seen this Bahrain Confidential plaques on the restaurants.
Yes.
What is that exactly? Do you go and recognize each restaurant and give them stars?
Yeah.
Are you like a Michelin star kind of stuff in Bahrain or what?
That's a nice compliment. No, it's our own event. So the plaques that you see in the restaurants are they're ones that have won awards.
Are these events every year?
Every year. Now we do it every year. Yeah. So the way our awards work is I and my company have no control over who wins.
Okay.
So
AI who decides? You can't say that. So
say again?
Is it an AI who decides this?
No. We have a panel of judges. I mean, honestly, I've had brands.
And these are like outsiders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, we publish the judges. It's crystal clear. We wanted to launch this event where we can genuinely, authentically, and organically recognize the best restaurants in Bahrain. Because when I moved to Bahrain, I realized that this island pretty much revolves around eating and drinking and going to good restaurants.
Okay.
So,
and we are talking about all fine dining restaurants.
All restaurants. It's totally open.
Of course, no kebab shops.
Actually, there's a few like smaller places, like kebab shops, I'm not sure. But like Haji's, Lumi. Oh. Yeah, it's not just fine dining. There's a lot of fine dining. Just to explain how the restaurant awards works. We have a panel of judges. Our judges are the general managers of the 5-star hotels. Wow. And each of the judges can nominate two
locally
of their staff.
Locally in Bahrain?
In Bahrain, yeah. Each of them can nominate two of their staff, normally exec chef, F&B manager, director marketing. Why did we choose these people? Well, when we launched this event as an idea, we wanted to do it organically so we would have no connection. Who knows hospitality F&B best? It's the general managers. They have spent their entire career working through the industry, through F&B, through events or catering, whatever, to become the GM. No one knows it better. And it is their job to go out into the market. So they go out, they go to different restaurants. That's part of it. They need to know the market, right? So we thought they're going to be the best judges. But there is one very clear rule. No general manager or judge can vote for any outlet connected to their brand.
Oh, of course.
So the general manager of the Ritz-Carlton cannot vote Trader Vic's or Cantina Carlo. Shout out to Bernard, the general manager of Ritz-Carlton. Legend.
I see you always.
Four Seasons general manager. Shout out to Jason Rogers. Absolute legend. They cannot vote for the general manager of Four Seasons cannot vote for, say, Cuts Restaurant or ReAsia.
Okay.
So, and this is clearly monitored. And then we have some nominate...
But how does that work when all the restaurants are there for the for nomination and then what, Ritz-Carlton stays off or the...
No. I mean...
I didn't quite get that. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, let's talk about if a general manager of one hotel, they're not allowed to vote for any of their own outlets because that's bias.
Yeah, of course,
but
it can't work.
These general managers go out to the market. Okay. So every judge can pick 5 restaurants, okay? And it can be any restaurant. There's no categories. It's so simple. I mean, look, let's say you're a judge. This is what happens. I would send our team would send you a form you fill out. Pick your 5 favorite restaurants.
Right,
let me ask you now, what's your 5 favorite restaurants?
Me?
Yeah.
Bro, you wouldn't like it.
No, not I mean, my cup of tea.
My showpiece restaurant. I love their kebabs. I'm a local guy, bro. I like Romancia for Arab food. I don't know. I'm very bad at this, man.
Yeah. But anyway, my point is you just pick your five favorite restaurants. So
it's because my wife cooks very well. I don't have to go to these restaurants.
Yeah.
Compliment right there.
So the general manager of this hotel might pick restaurants as their favorite from this hotel, or it could be somewhere in Adelia. And then we have additional judges. We have some influencers and food bloggers and then some other people. But we publish the judges. You can look now online and you can see who our judges are. It's so clean and authentic.
I didn't ask you to explain this. Why are you explaining? Did you ever get any comments like, hey, you guys are doing partialism or something? Because I see you saying like, hey, you know what? We don't do it. It's the others. Why you had that urge to say it when I asked?
Why? Good question. In this region, when you go to a business or a brand and you say that you're doing an awards, they just roll their eyes. It's like, how much is it going to cost me? So I, in fact, if you scroll back on Bar and Confidential, I've done content myself explaining how the process works. It's because something that I really drive home is authenticity. You know, there are so many awards. Like, you got these like business leader awards.
I get a couple of emails like they say, could you nominate? And the next email would be, it costs blah, 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 blah.
So it's a standard. Yeah. It's a business model. It's a good business model. It works. It brings in good business. So, I mean, look, we are a business. We commercialize it. We don't sell the awards. We commercialize it through sponsorships for the event. Perfect. And we produce publications where we seek advertising or it's social media advertising.
Nowadays, that, talking about that, anyone has awards, anyone has even doctorate, to be honest, with money.
What do you mean?
I mean, like people are buying these stuffs.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's being awarded. So
yeah.
So that's the reason why you need to really explain, right?
Yeah, I do explain it. It's the first thing I always say when someone asks me about it, because there is this thing. I mean, people always roll their eyes. You know, when I launched the education awards,
When did you do that education awards? Is it for schools?
Yes, schools and universities in 2022, two years ago.
Okay.
We're going to be doing our third edition.
But also,
this year.
You know, are these institutions looking up to that one day I want to get this Bahrain Confidential Award? And do you see that change happening when you launched the awards?
Yeah, it's because when things become regular, people look forward to it. The Bahrain Confidential Awards is different to the Golf Insider Education Awards, because the Education Awards, we call it an award, but it's more we contact the schools and universities and ask them to submit their innovation of the year. Okay. So it's not like done on voting. We contact all schools. Some of them, now more and more schools submit because they realize it's a serious thing. But no, it's a simple thing. Again, if you were a school principal, we'd be going to you saying, please tell us what is your area of excellence or innovation of the year. You submit it and then we review it. But whether or not a school advertises with us or a university works with us doesn't matter. We recognize anyone that puts in a good quality submission.
So you did restaurants. Now it's education. What's next?
I'm thinking about car awards. Cars. I probably should, right?
Car awards.
I should do, right? It's like, how am I not doing that already?
Wonderful. But what's there in Bahrain? Like the
But Bahrain Car of the Year Awards. But this is the thing. Again, it needs to be authentic. So I need to think of a way, how can I work out the judging process? This is something that's in the works.
You never thought about, since you're in the marketing field and the media field, you never thought about influencer awards or something like that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's something. There's
so
a lot
awards
of
is a thing, like it's a division by itself?
This is a strategy that I've put into the business. If you look at other big media companies in the world.
When did you start the awards thingy again?
The Bahrain Confidential Restaurant Awards started in 2019.
19, so it's after you came in.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was me and my father also plays a big part in the awards as well.
Your father is still involved in the business?
Not much.
Okay.
You know, he comes in maybe twice a week, comes in for an hour or
so
two.
So he's in Bahrain?
He's in Bahrain, yeah. He's chilling.
When you do certain things, does he still advise you, Charlie, why did you do that way?
Very occasionally. It's quite often. Sometimes I'll go to him for advice. And one of the best things that he's always done for me is, honestly, sometimes I'll go to him for advice and he won't give me the answer. He'll say, figure it out yourself.
Wow.
Which is great. That's but it amazing. Can be costly because it forces you to make mistakes. And he's wanted me to make mistakes. And that's helped me a lot.
So that shows his leadership. You know, it's not a, you know.
Yeah, it is. Oh, don't get me wrong. He's given me some fantastic advice. But sometimes we get lazy. If you've got someone that's got a lot of wisdom, sometimes you just refer to them. And if you do that too much, you don't think for yourself.
Yeah.
And the only way you can grow is by thinking for yourself and not being spoon-fed stuff. So it's not uncommon where I'll go to him asking for advice and he'll say, you can work that one out yourself. You know, you make the decision. And I'm like, oh. But then it forces you to really think. You're not relying or leaning onto someone, right? That's helped me a lot. And that I like to bring into the business as well. I like to give people a lot of autonomy. I like to let people make decisions.
Because this way, they would also surprise you sometimes, right?
With
some things which you have never thought about.
Exactly.
You wouldn't know that how great they have come up with this. You know, you wouldn't have expected.
Yeah.
It's because you gave the free hand.
Yeah. You hire talented people because they are talented. Everyone you meet knows something you don't know. So this is something I've learned over the years. I like to bring talented people in. Of course, you know, you've got certain boundaries and stuff within the business, but we're an SME media company. We can sort of, we try things, we fail. We try things, they work. We listen to what people suggest, we go with it. So it makes it fun as well.
What advice do you have to give to people who have lost their jobs for 2 or 3 months? I keep getting that on comments, you know? They say they are searching for jobs are limited. What do you think they need to work? Because, you know, I like some of the inspirational stuff which you post.
Mm.
You also read books, I think. You know, you use your time very well. I feel like you go to gym.
Mm.
What do you think they need to start off?
Mm.
What are they lacking that they are not finding the right opportunities on the right time?
Yeah, listen, first thing, there's a lot of opportunities out there. It's just a lot of people aren't looking hard enough. But they say
there are no jobs at all, the market's bad.
But you can create jobs, that's the thing. Okay, let me tell you. So let's say we're sort of recruiting at the moment, but let's say we weren't recruiting. This will probably almost guarantee you a job. So it depends on the job. If you're a creative or if you're sales or something, that adds value to any business. Find a business that you want to work for. Really look into that business, research that business, understand what they do. Write a letter.
But the thing is, for research, I need right mind. I don't have money to feed myself. I don't have money to pay the rent.
Well, hang on. You need to get a job, right?
Yeah, I need to get a job.
So I'm.
How do I get there?
Okay, so hear me out. This is what you do. And this will, I'd like to say, almost guarantee you a job. Well, it would work on me and it would work on a lot of people that I know. Find a business that you want to work for that your skills genuinely can add value to. If it's sales, that can add value to any company. If it's creative, maybe it's in media. Maybe you apply to me. Right, look into that business.
Having said that, Bahrain Confidential is hiring?
Three businesses are hiring, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, so, yeah. So, anyway, this is what you do. Find a business you want to work for where your skills can add value. Look into the business, okay, do a bit of research, and then what you do is you write a letter. When I say write a letter, I'm not talking typing, write a handwritten letter.
Wow.
When's the last time you wrote a handwritten letter?
Just now, while I was writing the rap for you.
Okay. Before that, let's say long ago. People don't write handwritten letters anymore.
Yeah, I mean, even I forgot how to even write sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
There's no flow
anymore.
If
someone that was talented, that genuinely believed they could add value to my company or one of my companies, and they wrote me a handwritten letter saying, Dear Charlie or Dear HR, whoever it was, here's a bit about me, da-da-da. Always have in mind, don't talk about yourself too much. Always have in mind, how are you going to benefit them? Write them a letter of how you can add value, what you can give to them. Maybe you just say, oh, happy to do like a 1 week trial to show you where I can add value, and write it and sign it off, and then add maybe a couple of things that you've noticed about their business. So it shows that you've done your research. Write the letter properly. There's a way to do letters. Date in the top right with the address in the top left. Formalize it properly.
Address,
handwrite it.
No, man, come on. That's 90s thing. What, to write address and date.
But it's something different.
Let it be just Dear Charlie, right?
It's something different. It's something different. Yeah. Yeah.
But probably you are impressed by this, not anyone else.
It shows that you've put time into it. People don't write handwritten letters anymore. So that works for women as well, by the way. Write a nice handwritten letter, or for guys,
I've also heard, like, you know, just do a video message, give a video interview, you know. So I think all it boils down to one thing, be an extra than the others.
Actually,
right? Be among the few that shows genuine interest.
Yes.
Because, you know, when I look for jobs, I just get only CVs, CVs, CVs with no dear, hi, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, good cover letter. Then, yeah, yeah.
Nothing. I mean,
no,
not even an email.
A good cover letter
it's
goes a long
no
way.
No subject. It's literally no subject, a CV. Yeah. And then I'm like, man, you're not even putting an effort.
Mm.
You know, you're just forwarding CVs to multiple.
I get that. Or even nothing. It's just an attachment, not even a subject.
Exactly.
But one thing I'd add, you just made me realize something, is actually produce something for them. So let's say you want to get into sales and business development.
Perfect.
Contact a company, show them a prospect list saying, look, I'd love to work with you. From day one, I can contact these companies. I believe I can bring in this much business. If I got that, I'd be like, come join me. You are proactive. You want to show you're proactive.
Wow.
If you're creative or into editing content, why don't you offer to come do a complimentary shoot at their... Do you know a test that I do for staff that I'm hiring for creative and social media?
Okay.
I do this all the time. When they come to the office, interview them, I like to know about their personality, blah, blah, blah. Go through all the normal stuff. And then before they leave, it really puts them on the spot. I shouldn't put this on air, but I am going to put this on air or on live, whatever. Is I ask them there and then to shoot on their phone their experience in the office, and they can use whatever they want, and they need to shoot and edit it within 10 or 15 minutes, edit it on CapCut, whatever. Yeah. So they go around the office, and this one girl that came in about a week ago, she did something really cool. She came around, she did this like TikTok trend, and it was fantastic, really, really good. So showing an example of what you can do there and then that you can add value to the business goes a long way.
Perfect.
And you'll get a job.
That's a good takeaway, guys. I mean, rather than saying that market's bad, blah, 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 and then, you know, they would be ending up watching reels, motivation, sadness, da-da-da-da, you know?
Yeah.
Where they get hooked up to, I mean.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say motivation, because that's come a bit of a buzzword now. Yeah. And I think if you depend on motivation, you won't get anything done. If you depend on motivation, then you're just like a feather in the wind waiting to be blown by something. Certainly as a man, you need to do what needs to be done regardless of how you feel. Going back to things to do, people to see, places to be. Sometimes I wake up and I don't want to go to work, or I don't want to go to this meeting, yeah, or I don't feel like it. But
I don't have
that in and of itself is a muscle that you can train.
I have depression.
Right.
And this is what they said, right? I have depression.
Everyone has depression now.
My mind's not working anymore. I don't know what to do. I don't have a job. I don't have money. I think they need to change the narrative.
Yeah.
And say how I can benefit, how I can give to the companies who approach me, right? Mm. So they need to change their words.
Positivity.
Yeah.
Just show that you're hardworking. Because hard work and doing things that you don't want to do and still doing them is actually like a muscle that you can train. So the more you do it, the more you get up at 5:30 a.m. and go to the gym every day, you just get so, so resilient. So now whenever I deal with some sort of a hardship, it's not nice, don't want to deal with it, but I do it, but I realize I'm getting mentally stronger. You get better and better.
Yeah, and you don't have to do everything today. You can do and baby steps.
Bit by bit,
but
yeah.
Continue, but do not stop. Do not procrastinate, you know, that I will do it one fine day. No.
Consistency is key, brother.
Yeah.
But on depression, that's an interesting thing, because does it interest you, or don't you find it weird that there's like more people depressed today than ever before, and we live in the most richest times ever?
Because I think they say this word depression. Mm. So it's like, you know, when you go to a doctor and let's say if doctor says, no, you don't have anything. And then, or compare that with a doctor saying, you have ADHD, blah, blah, blah. This is the prescription.
Everyone has something now.
So what I'm thinking, everyone has something now, exactly. Mm. So when I get the name, I marry this name, depression. Oh, depression, that's why.
They get attached
to it. This doesn't work, that's why that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Then we make stories, we internalize.
Yeah.
Kalas, I am a patient.
I quite like what Andrew Tate says about this, and I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but when he talks about depression, he always says he doesn't believe in depression,
which really
annoys people.
He's the only guy outrightly says that he doesn't believe.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't believe in it, which I think is a great philosophy to have, because the thing is, when you say that to people that claim to be depressed, they go, no, it's like they really want to believe it's real. It's like, I don't want that mindset. I don't want to believe in it. Why do you really want to believe in it? Why didn't you try not believe in it? Okay, there are some people that are genuinely depressed, but back to my point, it's very weird today that there are like more people depressed than ever before, and we live in the richest times. Let's do a little timeline on history, shall we? If you were born in 1900, let's imagine you're born in 1900. At age 14, 1914, World War I kicks off, okay? Tens of millions dead.
Yeah.
You'd see your siblings or your brothers or your dads or whatever just die. Loads of people died. Horrible time, okay? And then 1918, the war finishes, and then you have the Spanish flu. Again, kills tens of millions. So Spanish flu, a genuine, an actual pandemic that killed loads of people. And then imagine you survive that. Then you're what, like 20 years old? Okay. Then you have the Great Depression, 1929. Yeah, wrecked loads of lives, starvation, poverty. And then imagine you survive that. You are 33. What happens when you're 33? Sorry, then you survive that, you're 33. Then you're 39. What happens when you're 39? 1939, World War II kicks off. Bang, tens more millions dead. Bombs above your head, bullets above your head. Lives are wrecked, you're living on rations. Life is just horrible. Mm. You're lucky to come out of that alive. But imagine you live that. You're only 45, okay?
Yeah.
You didn't really hear of depressed people in 1945. So imagine you've been through all that.
They didn't have choice to call it that I'm depressed. They didn't have that choice. I mean, they
exactly.
Really get
you,
up
you,
and...
You just... You know, I speak to my grandmother who's... getting old now. She's still alive. Alhamdulillah.
God bless
her. And she was born in 1933. Wow. So she was, six when World War II kicked off. And I hear the stories about her and I says, she wasn't depressed. She had bullets. She used to hear there's a bomb called the doodle bug. I forget the official name of it. And it was a German bomb that would fly into London because she lived in London during the London Blitz. It was a bomb that would fly into London. an unmanned bomber, and you'd hear it, it'd make this horrible sound, but you wanted to keep hearing the sound, because what happened is when the sound cut off, that's when it would just fall and it would bomb. They were called doodle bugs. Look into them. You hear the sound. I've been with my grandma and I've played it, and it just gives her the heebie-jeebies. So imagine these things. But I said, you know, they hardly had any food. They didn't get to go to school. I mean, I know people complain about school, but you did want to be educated. Life was genuinely tough. Now, fast forward to 2024.
They were literally making a life.
Yeah. You were living on rations. You were like hungry all the time. Mm. People talk about hunger. They don't know what hunger is. None of us probably in this room have ever been actually hungry or starving. 100%,
I agree. Right? Completely, yeah.
So fast forward to 2024. We have temperature controlled rooms. It's hot outside. We don't feel it. We're in AC.
Yeah.
I can pick up this and I can order Talabat. Shout out to Talabat. I love Talabat.
Yeah.
You can order food. It's delivered to your home. Okay. We work in nice warm offices. We don't really have problems. Mm. So I think the problem with society today is people just, I believe as humans for millions of years, we've gone through hardship. Okay. Mm. Life has been really tough. We now have very easy lives. And I think what's happened is since life has come so easy for so many people, they invent problems and it actually creates anxiety. It's like I go to the gym, let's say every single day at 5:30, 6 a.m. Hmm. By doing that really, really hard workout that I do, I basically don't have anxiety. Anyone that has anxiety, go to the gym every single day. Have you met someone that's like really, really fit and healthy and they're depressed at the same time?
No,
you don't see it, right?
I haven't seen it. No.
You don't see it?
No, to be honest. I mean, it's also for me when I know that I have woke up for 4 a.m., we have prayers, you know, and if I have done gym on that day couldn't go wrong.
Yeah.
Like that's my best.
Yeah. Or something that does go wrong, it bounces off you like water off a duck's back, right?
Yeah, because you the day is in your control now.
Mm.
You know, when you wake up in the morning, because you know you're not waking up to problems, you're waking up to the start, zero.
Yeah. You're like you're grinding.
Yeah.
Like when I go to the gym in the morning and I like to do my sauna in the morning, my steam room, sit in there, drink my protein shake. Oh, my mornings are fantastic. I love my mornings. Wonderful. And then I go to the office, I like to get to the office 8:30. I get in, I'm full of energy. let's get the day started. And now a lot of the people are sort of like waking up, but just last week I got everyone in the company gym membership, so I'm building.
I've seen something like that. Yeah, you I'm got build, some you gave the gym membership or you gave some every, club
we did a this is with UFC gym. They've got two fantastic gyms, one in Jaffair, one in Harbour Row. I go to the one in Harbour Row, but the staff have access to both.
You don't get such fancy gyms in Jaffair.
No, do you not? No, I don't think you do. No, you have to go up north a bit
there,
more.
There was one what was that called? The fancy one again? I forgot.
Spartan.
No, not the Spartan. The fancy one, of course.
Don't you have an Olympia gym here? Because I use Olympia gym in Seif.
Okay.
So, got everyone gym memberships, and so I'm going to build the most swolest jacked team company in Bahrain.
So the business meeting starts 6 a.m.
Yeah.
So the office starts 6 a.m., not 8:30.
Yeah.
You're very smart, man.
Well, I was saying to everyone.
This is what he's trying to do with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was saying to everyone, instead of work from home, work from gym.
Wow.
Yeah, because I love training, man. Training's such a big part of my life. It's the glue that holds my day together. And I was thinking, because I use two gyms now, if I'm in the UFC gym and I see my staff, because we start the office at 8 a.m. and I'm, you know, we're sitting there training. I'm like, nah, let's go to work later. Let's carry on training, you know?
Wow. That's amazing. That's a great culture you have kept. Yeah. So having said that, I'm going to start the skit. All right. So it should be a rapid fire.
Ah, quick fire. Yeah, I like these. I've done loads of these, but no one's ever done them to me. So this will be interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
So let's start with first. Okay. So you just need to reply. And if you have some points to say, you can give a 3 words or 4 words.
Yeah.
Whatever. Speed or style? Fast. I don't know, 3 seconds finished.
I have to think. I'm a thinker.
You cannot think. This is rapid fire.
I'm going to go style.
Okay. Track day or road trip?
Road trip.
Have you ever done the track? I've never seen you.
Loads.
Doing track. Really?
Yeah, all over the world. Yeah.
Manual transmission or paddle shifters?
Manual.
Perfect. Turbocharged or naturally aspirated? I don't know. What does that mean?
Well, you can have a naturally aspirated turbocharged engine, so both.
Okay. Classic Porsche 911 or modern Porsche 911?
Oh, classic. And let me add to that, 911 930 turbo, the SC.
What do you own, by the way? You just own a...
911 Carrera S. It's the 991 generation.
Okay. Convertible or coupe?
Depends on my mood, because today I'd love to have a convertible. The weather's quite nice, right?
Okay.
So, depends on my mood.
Rear wheel drive or all wheel drive?
It depends, but let's go all wheel. Yeah, four wheel. Yeah.
City cruise or open highway?
Open highway.
Carbon fiber or leather interior?
Well, you can have carbon fiber and leather because you don't want to have carbon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Carbon fiber seats are uncomfortable.
What kind of stupid question is this? ChatGPT, you need to get better, bro.
Leather interior with nice carbon door panels.
Again, let me talk about carbon fiber. Mm. Every auto influencer I've seen,
it's a big deal.
Content creator, carbon fiber.
Yeah.
What is that other than a plastic or like a plasticky material with the carbon fiber texture?
Yeah.
What's the deal? So fascinating?
Yeah.
iPhone basically saying, you know, I have the new feature of this
button. Yeah, carbon. I sort of agree with you. It gets a bit too much hype, but it is an incredibly engineered piece of material. Ah. So yeah, it's expensive. So it's nice to have on the car. That's sort of part of it. But no, the main thing is practically, it's an incredibly strong piece of material and incredibly lightweight. So these supercar brands, especially McLaren, are hell-bent on creating the most lightweight car they can. I mean, McLaren's cars, the technology and the lightness of the cars is phenomenal. I mean, when you drive them, I mean, incredible to drive, but all of them focus on creating lightweight cars. All these sport cars, the more carbon they can have, deviates away from whatever other materials they're using. So to answer your question directly, it's an expensive material, but incredibly well-engineered. It's so strong and tough and incredibly lightweight.
Are there cheap carbon fiber or are there? Is there any categories of carbon fiber or carbon fiber is carbon fiber?
You can get different grades, but you get these Chinese cars, you'll see what looks like carbon, but it's just plastic.
So it is just a light body part of a car, right?
It's very, very lightweight. So you'll see
that's
some
the only
bumpers.
Key feature of it. Is it also the aesthetics? Like it looks.
It looks good. It looks good. But if you really think about it, I don't know why it's sort of this like funny color. But it's maybe it's good marketing. Maybe there was a manufacturer of carbon that thought we're going to make this sexy. But practically and objectively, on a sports car or a supercar, you want carbon fiber because it's much lighter than the alternative material.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So
question because I do believe there is too much hype.
I've seen that with everyone, carbon fiber. I'm like, what is this? Because
what's
I'm a material trader, right? A scrap metal trader.
Yeah.
So we get all kinds of material.
Yeah.
Aluminum. We have dismantled aeroplanes. We have dismantled power stations. We get copper. We get aluminum. We get acrylic. Mm. We get plastics. HD, PET. I can go on and on and on and on. I mean, if I get carbon fiber, I would throw it in waste because it's not recyclable.
Give it to me, I'll sell it.
I mean, if it's a broken piece, you know, I'm saying that. That's why I'm like, as a material trader, I'm like, what is this stuff?
Yeah.
You know? Mm. But yeah, thanks for enlightening me.
There you go.
So now the cars. I don't know exactly if ChatGPT has done a
good
job.
That's all right, let's go. We can correct ChatGPT.
Let's try. Porsche 911 or Ferrari 488?
It depends. A Porsche 911 is one of the few sports cars you can drive it every single day, not have problems, and it's nice to drive. Ferrari 488, if I was on a track, I love the 488. Mm. I actually personally prefer the 458.
Okay.
But it depends. It's hard to... People often say, you know, Porsche or say Lamborghini or Ferrari, you can't compare them. I mean, one supercar, one's... So it's hard to compare sometimes.
Okay. But you have at least 8 of them to compare.
Yeah.
So Lamborghini Huracan or McLaren 720S?
McLaren 720S.
Okay. Aston Martin Vantage or Audi R8?
Vantage.
Nissan GTR or Chevrolet Corvette?
GTR.
GTR. Okay. Mercedes AMG GT or BMW M8?
Ooh.
I like BMW M8.
I haven't driven the AMG GT, but I'd go for the AMG GT. Yeah, because I want to drive it.
So Jaguar F-Type or Maserati Gran Turismo?
F-Type.
Tesla Roadster or Rimac Nevera? These both are electric supercars.
Rimac which one?
Rimac Nevera.
I don't know that, so I'll go for the Tesla.
Tesla.
Yeah.
But you never drove Tesla.
Yeah, I've never driven Tesla, but I want to drive them, right? Yeah. I want to try it out, yeah.
Ford GT or Acura NSX?
Ford GT. Anyway, ChatGPT, there's been so many discussions about ChatGPT.
Yeah, but, you know, before when we had Google,
yeah,
everyone had Google, by the way. Mm. But then, you know, as a trader, we would get requests from companies, we need this, do you have?
Yeah.
And I'll give you a classic example. In COVID time, we were supplying, you know, the disinfectant items and sprayers and things like that.
That's good business to be in during that time.
Yeah, I used the storm because our other businesses were crushed for longer period, so we had to do something.
Yeah.
So a company in Tubli asked me a sprayer, okay? And then I'm like, that sprayer is out of stock, like masks were out of stock for the disinfection. I sent my driver to Anwar Discount Center in Tubli.
Mm.
I got one, I sold it and I made a 10 BD.
Oh, well.
He could have searched it. It's right there. I'm saying it's more of that how you know how to use, how to search. Like even back then, Google search. Like even now, people don't know to search. They're looking for many things, but they wouldn't just do Google search.
Yeah.
So now with ChatGPT, it's about how smartly using the prompt.
Yeah, it all comes down to the prompting. And then it comes to putting it as part of your daily life, because we all use Google every day. Yeah. So remembering to perhaps instead shift to ChatGPT.
ChatGPT made the rap which I sang today.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not a rapper.
Okay, yeah.
You definitely know
it. Yeah, it was a good rap. It was a good rap.
You know, and I use it, but it's all about, you don't take the response in face value. You need to negotiate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, make it short. You gotta fine tune it.
Mm-hmm. Put his words, places to be, and person to meet, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
You need to keep saying. I said, add yalla. Habibi.
Yeah.
You know, do that, do this. So you don't have to think and compose anymore.
How often do you use ChatGPT? Use it every day?
I use it a lot.
Yeah.
Again, I don't take the... If you get the first response, it's too ChatGPT-ish, you know? It is too... People can understand that you have used an AI to basically generate your comment or description or anything. So you need to keep adding and talking like...
Yeah.
You know, that's the very interesting part. Like I told you, the Translate works better than Google Translate in ChatGPT. I mean, I'm using also the paid version. I have reached the number, so I'm using the paid version, but it's amazing. But AI, again, it's not just ChatGPT, but it has helped us a lot.
Yeah.
Like even if you want to, let's say, hey, you know what? I want to make a storyboard for so-and-so skit.
Mm.
It will give you angles.
Wow.
And
we should probably be using it more. We use it a lot. I need to check with our production team how we're using it, but there's probably more ways we can use it.
It is all about having it. It is not about the engine is there.
Mm.
It's how you use the prompt, how creative you get.
Yeah.
Like I've told you, classic example. One a friend of mine yesterday, you know, I asked him to give me a Malayali text.
Mm.
He didn't know how to type, so he typed that in English.
Mm.
When I just copy pasted that in ChatGPT, it gave me Malayali text just like that.
Wow.
And perfect. Like there was no mistake.
Yeah.
So it's amazing people who made it.
Yeah, it is. Sam Altman.
Yeah.
Yeah. CEO of, what is the company called? OpenAI.
OpenAI, exactly.
Yeah. They just got, did you see? It just came out. Was it like $150 billion valuation?
Mm.
Just came out in the news. I was actually listening to it on a podcast this morning. Yeah.
Interesting. So you watch a lot of podcasts and you read a lot of books.
Lots. I spend 2 to 3 hours a day probably. Either reading or listening to podcasts. No, I'm on the move. So whilst I'm
not a good reader. I watch a lot of podcasts, but I'm not a good reader.
I recommend reading. A lot of people struggle with reading because of their attention span. But the good thing about reading is I find I retain a lot more. So I can recite a lot more information when I read a book. Okay. And there's something very therapeutic and sort of tranquil about sitting and reading a book.
I love the experience of reading, but I don't get there.
Why not?
I don't know. I think it's the attention span. I quickly get on the messages.
See, I see that as a challenge.
Quickly get on the phone.
I have a short attention span, but it's a way of training it. By reading, you're forcing yourself to train yourself out of that short attention span.
Do you have a specific timing to do that?
So for quite a few years before, it was in the mornings, but now I'm doing my training in the mornings, and now it's in the evening. And I've just built in my home, I have like my, I call my sort of knowledge corner. So I've got like a ton of books.
No phones there.
Actually, I've got a little table, so I put my phone there, but I probably shouldn't do that. That's a good idea. Got my books, got a really nice like sofa with this footrest.
So you have made a space, so mentally you know that this space is only for reading.
Yeah, or I sit there and I think it's really important just to like take time aside and to think. Some of the greatest people in the world, innovators, inventors or writers were like big thinkers.
My thinking starts when I do long drive. That's why I do long drive. When you ask me, do you drive or do you fly? I actually drive.
Yeah.
At least a month, I need it.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Driving does clear your head, but I normally listen to stuff. But even it's like going for walks without your phone, that's a bit of a life hack. You go for a walk without your phone, it sort of feels uncomfortable because you want to like either listen to music or something, but just go and you think through things. I think for a lot of people, we get so busy in life, always like needing to do the next thing or we're on this or on this, but we don't actually take time to zoom out and look at where we are in life or what the next things are or catching on to the next trends. If you're constantly working every day, if you don't take time to step aside, you can miss out on big opportunities. I travel, traveling helps me do that.
Mm.
So I have this sort of working method that I've done for about 6 years now. I call it sprint and walk. So basically when I'm in Bahrain during peak time, I sprint. But I travel like once a month, sometimes twice a month. No, normally on average, maybe once a month, sometimes twice a month. Anyway, so when I'm in Bahrain, I sprint. I'll be on the ball, up early, work, and then I take these breaks. Sometimes I travel for 2-3 days.
You're saying sprint? What, sprint on work?
Sprint. No, sprint is an analogy for working really hard.
Okay, okay.
And then when I travel, I walk. Because you can't work, you can't sprint forever, but you can sprint in periods.
So when I sprint,
my work, I'm very productive. I get a lot done and my output is very high. Some people focus too much on being efficient than being effective. And there's a big difference between the two. So when I travel, sometimes it's for a couple of days. It could just be Dubai. I could be in London, you know, wherever it is that I am. But that resets me. It really clears my head. And then when I come back to Bahrain, I'm back on it. You know, that's my, it's called, sprint walk. So
sprint walk.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Because a lot of people, maybe they work at an average. Yeah, it's a great way to work. Because we're not designed to be working hard all the time. Mm. I mean, if you go back, we're talking about the agriculture time. They would work in seasons because there was no work in the winter. There was no vegetation.
Wow.
So they'd have months off. But then during the summers and the spring, they would work very hard. It was only the Industrial Revolution when things really changed. For millions of years, we would work in seasons. And before the agriculture time, it was... I mean, it wasn't working. It was, we were like hunter-gatherers, right? And even as hunter-gatherers, we would work in periods.
You're great at your history. Did you learn history? That's your major? What is it about? Or is it because you are in media, you need to know?
No, my own self-interest. I love history.
You just gave also like from the year 1930, 1918. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, right.
Yeah, I like history. I find history fascinating and we can learn a lot from history. But how do I learn? I learn myself. I always say I'm self-educated. I didn't go to university. I'm actually a college dropout. I didn't even finish college. Yeah, same for you.
Few understand.
So I always wanted to do my own thing. So I read a lot and I listen a lot. So I love learning about history. Because when you understand history, everything you see today or the problems you see today sort of make sense. Mm. And you look at what's happening in the world and you think...
It's a human behavior anyway, right?
It is, yeah. Yeah, it is. It is.
You see it in a bit of modern way nowadays.
Yeah. So, yeah, I find history very, very interesting. I think more people should learn history. You learn a lot from it. But, yeah, back to the working method. I mean, for some people, they don't have that ability to be able to do that. But for me, it's actually the most natural way of working.
This is amazing. I think you need to have something on... I mean, this is lovely. I'm going to post this anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, this is some secret of Charlie. Like this, yeah. I think we all can do it. You know?
Anyone that follows me will see it, but it doesn't need to be like traveling far. I mean, I sort of travel all over the place through work or my own personal. I like to take regular vacations. I do often, but little vacations. I don't like traveling longer than a week.
Once in 2 months, once in every quarter. I don't know.
Every couple of months. My work travels, media trips. They're quite often, but it's good to. Yeah, it's you need to like process things, right? Work on your next plan and strategy, and you can't do that when you're constantly.
Yeah, when I sit in my office, I don't get the ideas.
No.
It's when I drive to gym or it's when I'm getting out of it.
Yeah.
This is where I...
And one thing is people must make the mistake of when they're sat at their desk or in their office or place of work, they feel like they're working. But we all have it where we're sat at our desk and we're not really doing anything. We might be clicking or moving things. Exactly. So if you can train yourself when you're doing that, get away from your desk.
Caffeinated.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
But it's amazing, bro. It's amazing.
No, I really enjoyed that, man. It was really my first podcast.